Welcome to Today's Issues, offering a Christian response to the issues of the day. Here's your host, Tim Wildman, President of the American Family Association.
Ladies and gentlemen, there's just not enough things happening in the world, so we're just gonna play music today because there's nothing to talk about.
Right.
Just as you know, I'm just kidding. Tim Wildman here with Ed Battagliano. Good morning, Ed.
Good morning, Tim.
Good morning, Fred Jackson.
Good morning. Yeah, there's
kind of another slow news day, isn't it?
Another slow news day, I tell you.
Good night. All right, we thank you for joining us here on AFR. If you would like to join us on, as Ed calls it, that there internet, you just simply need to go to Facebook or YouTube and type in Today's Issues, and you can watch us live stream the program there. We also post the stories that we discuss on our Facebook page, and we thank everyone who joins us there. A lot of listeners gather there to count my us for the radio show.
And they interact. They kind of know each other. Yeah. They'll say, hey, yeah, how you doing?
We do pay attention to that.
Yeah,
we don't always comment. But anyway, thank you for those who join us on Facebook.
Can I just say, just because I don't even know when the years were. Fred, you might remember when we used to have the AFA report from noon. At first it was from noon to 12:25 or 12:05 to 12:30. Uh-huh. And this was really before we had the kind of talk radio.
Late 90s into 2000, a little bit more.
And I remember it was sometimes hard to find enough news stories. Mm-hmm. Just for us, this was your dad, Tim, Brother Don. I was on, you were on a lot. Rusty Benson was on some. Mm-hmm. And
didn't have the internet, though, did you? But late 80s, early 90s?
Yeah, probably
no,
not well, a whole
no, we
lot.
Didn't
That's
start,
true. That's true.
AFR didn't start till 91, so...
But it was sometimes hard to find enough stories to talk about for 25 minutes. Mm-hmm. Now, it's we could literally sit here for 12 hours.
Yep. When Marvin Sanders, Marvin passed in 12, a lot of our listeners remember Marvin. Anyway, when he and I started doing the program in 91, 92, right in there, Today's Issues, we were 3 days a week for half an hour.
Really?
Yeah, and then I remember us talking about going to an hour. And Marvin and I were looking at each other going, what are we going to talk about
for an hour?
Right, so we started having guests. For years and years and years, we had guests so that Marvin and I didn't have to make up stuff to talk
right.
about. We just let the guests talk. You
yes.
know, it made it easy. And so then the world changed with the internet, and then we adapted and began to have plenty to talk about.
So, yes,
but
sir.
But anyway, lots to discuss today. We again, as always, we thank you for listening to American Family Radio. Fred?
Yeah, breaking news this hour. Federal appeals court this morning ordered the dismissal of the criminal case against President Trump's former national security advisor, Michael Flynn. You will remember back several weeks ago, the Department of Justice said they were dropping the case. So you had the scene of the Department of Justice and the lawyer for Michael Flynn sitting in a courtroom saying, we both agree now the case against Michael Flynn should be dropped. Except U.S. District Judge Emmett Sullivan said, nah, I don't think so. I think there's some politicking going on here. I'm not going to abide by your request, United States Department of Justice, headed by Attorney General Barr. And so Barr and company went to court and Flynn's lawyers, and they said, listen, this number one, that just doesn't happen. When the Federal Justice Department says, we don't think there's a case here anymore, we're dropping the charges. And then for the initial judge in the case to say, I disagree with you. I don't want to drop the case.
He wanted to hold hearings.
He wanted to hold hearings. He brought in another lawyer who agreed with him.
Quite frankly, I never heard of this on any court level.
No. Me either.
Where a defendant, what you call him, that's right.
Yeah, Michael Flynn was.
Where a defendant in county court, for that matter, and you have the city prosecutor say we're dropping the charges. The judge doesn't say, "Oh no, you're not." We're. I'm gonna. I mean, at any level, I've never heard of that. It's extremely rare. But the bottom line is, General Flynn. Well, what happened is, you remember, a lot of exculpatory mm-hmm. evidence mm-hmm. was learned that was not given to Flynn's attorneys back when he pleaded guilty and during his court case. So that's against judicial ethics, to say the least. So his attorney and a lot of that the FBI withheld. I guess it was the FBI, the Justice Department.
Yes, it was.
FBI withheld from Flynn's attorneys, and you can't do that.
Including a couple of the FBI agents who had first interviewed Flynn, mm-hmm. saying, "I don't think there's any crime here." Right. I mean, that's huge. Yes. When you have the
also, you remember there were those inside the FBI who initially wrote, "There's why are we going after this guy? There's nothing to go after him on." Mm-hmm. And that's when politics entered the picture, and you know, Hillary Clinton's fanboy. What's his name?
Michael Cohen?
No, not Michael. I'm talking about the guy.
Peter Strzok.
Peter Strzok. Oh, yeah.
Got involved, mm-hmm. FBI agent, and said, "No, we're going after this guy."
It became clear that what the Obama administration's Department of Justice was trying to do, and the cabal that was trying to either stop Trump or, after he got elected, derail his presidency, was they were trying to find a way to put pressure, legal pressure, on Michael Flynn to try to get him to flip mm-hmm. on the president. And so that's why they
about
basically,
what? About
well,
the Russian
about
influence.
The Russian, yes, that's that was
so they could prove there was a Russian, that the Russians worked with President Trump to affect the camp, the
and that he's a Russian asset
or
the Russians influenced
bizarre
the
stuff. Really, yeah. Really bizarre stuff, and James Comey was in on that too. But today, the bottom line is a federal appellate court who is above Judge
Sullivan
mm-hmm. Dismissed the case. So we can
ordered Sullivan to dismiss it.
Yes.
So this is a bit of a rebuke to Judge Sullivan.
Yeah, this is what the court had to say. In this case, the district court's actions will result in specific harms to the exercise of the executive branch's exclusive prosecutorial power. The contemplated proceedings would likely require the executive to reveal the internal deliberative process behind its exercise of prosecutorial discretion, interfering with Article 2 charging authority. Now, that's a lot of legalese in there. But basically what they're saying, you can't do this.
Right.
When the Department of Justice says it wants to drop the case, that the case was unfair from the beginning, you don't have a case, Judge Sullivan, to move forward. Yeah. So they were just talking about this on Fox before I came in the studio. They said it's possible that Sullivan may say, "No, I still disagree."
So he can disobey?
I don't see how.
I don't either.
Yeah, but now to Fred's point.
We have a lawyer coming on at 10:30 that can answer that question.
Yeah. Right?
Probably. Mm.
So Judge Sullivan was already, what the court's saying is Article 2 is the executive branch. The executive branch executes the laws.
Yes.
Prosecutes.
Yes.
You can't have the judge saying, "I'm going to take over that process as well, and then I'm going to issue an impartial ruling." Come on.
Mm-hmm.
But if he's willing to go and do that, maybe he would defy the judge. I don't know. At that point, you should be impeached.
General Michael Flynn was accused of being a Russian asset. General of the U.S. Army Michael Flynn was accused of being a Russian asset. That's what the FBI was trying to prove.
He not only that, he was in cahoots, Tim. He was in cahoots.
Yeah.
With the Russians.
General Flynn, I remember he said a few weeks ago, he said, "You know, I went into the Army to fight the Russians."
Right.
Yeah. That was the whole point of me getting involved in service to our country at the time, Cold War, maybe post-Cold War. But anyway, we'll see if there's anything else to this story, but it's a good news day for General Flynn, and I guess for the Trump administration, because the president agreed that he all along that the general was set up and mistreated. Mm-hmm. And I think ultimately the president would have pardoned him, but he doesn't have to now.
Right.
Doesn't appear anyway.
Yeah.
You're listening to the radio program Today's Issues on AFR. Next story, Fred.
Bubba Wallace
uh-huh.
is a NASCAR driver. And back several days ago at Talladega Raceway in Alabama, the story broke that someone had placed a noose in the garage that was to be used by the Bubba Wallace team.
He's the only black NASCAR driver.
Yes.
Came up through their diversity program, Steve Jordahl said.
Mm-hmm.
His team did, of a noose being placed in his garage.
Yes. I tell
like that. In a hangman's noose.
Yes. FBI comes in to investigate. And lo and behold, they find pictures that this noose, quotation marks, was there way back in October of last year.
Yeah, they had another race there back then. They had two races a year at Talladega.
Yeah. It turns out that this was a garage door pull.
Right.
A pull.
Right.
People may have seen that before.
That's what the FBI said yesterday.
Yep.
FBI sent 15 agents, 15,
mm-hmm.
to find out about what happened here.
Yeah. So.
And they.
Anyway, normally this would put the story to rest, but for Bubba Wallace, he's not letting this go. He was on CNN last night with Don Lemon, and regardless of what the FBI, he says, still a noose to him. Cut number four.
I've been racing all my life. We've raced out of hundreds of garages that never had garage pools like that. So people that want to call it a garage pool and put out old videos and photos of knots being in their as their evidence, go ahead. But from the evidence that we have, and that I have, it's a straight up noose. The FBI has stated it was a noose over and over again. NASCAR leadership has stated that it was a noose. I can confirm that. I actually got evidence of what was hanging in my garage, over my car, around my pit crew guys, to confirm that it was a noose. And never seen anything like it.
So, well, I will say this. I've also never seen a garage door pull like that. Okay. It does look like a noose. It's a loop with the I don't know how to describe it, with the rope that goes around, and
you might could hang a frog.
It's not a big noose. So I will grant him that it looks like a noose, but I don't know how he can claim it's directed towards him, because nobody knew, first of all, which garage he would be in.
No.
And in the last race in the fall, there was somebody else who was in there, and so I don't know why he is.
No, he said it. This is how bizarre his answer was to Don Lemon. It wasn't directed at me, end quote, but it was a noose.
Yeah. So
that's what he said.
How
is it
racially?
So what are you doing on Don Lemon?
Yes.
No, it's not a story. This is just. This guy here, he had the sympathy of all the and the support of all the his fellow NASCAR drivers and their teams, you know, because he had spoken out against the Confederate flag being flown by fans at NASCAR events, which is a long-standing tradition in that sport. But to double down that this was somehow an act of terrorism committed against you, and then you say it wasn't directed at me, but it was a noose. Those are two completely contradictory statements.
Right.
That it was a noose, yeah, it looked like a noose, like you said, Ed. It wasn't directed to me because it's been there since last October.
Yes.
In this garage,
mm-hmm.
and nobody knew that his car would be put in that garage.
Well, it may have been there longer than that.
Yeah.
But what we're saying is last October, we have a picture of the garage with a different car in it, and mm-hmm. that garage pull is still there. It was there back then. It may have been there for years. But
however, the final arbiter of all things racism in the country Al Sharpton. He also has concluded that regardless of what the FBI is saying, whoever did this is guilty. Cut number six.
The FBI identified it as a noose. NASCAR said it was a noose, so went along with the FBI's characterization. It was a noose. So the question is, even if they did not know that Bubba Wallace was going to use that stall, why was a noose in the stall? It's clear what a noose represents. And I think to go whether or not they knew that sooner or later the one black driver would use that stall really doesn't answer why it was in the stall at all. And then did someone know that it was in the stall when they did belatedly assign Bubba there? So I don't think this answers a lot of questions. And clearly from what we just saw of Bubba Wallace, it does not seem he, who is the victim and possible target in this matter, seems to be satisfied with this. So I do not think that we've seen closure in this particular inquiry.
Well, because Al Sharpton, you won't get invited to talk about this issue if there's closure. Mm-hmm. So he has every motive to keep this going. Listen, I don't know how you call this racially charged. If there's one black driver in NASCAR, are you telling me that someone put a noose up there thinking that eventually he was going to wind up in that garage?
That's what Al Sharpton just said.
Yeah, I don't know how you can call it racially charged.
This is much ado about nothing, as they say. This Bubba Wallace fella is hurting himself by continuing on. He should have just said, listen, it was a misunderstanding, and I appreciate the FBI investigating this, and I appreciate all the support of all of my fellow NASCAR drivers on Sunday. It was a wonderful thing to see, and I'm moving on to the next race, and I thank everybody who showed their love and concern.
Yeah, and thank you for the display of racial unity that all the other drivers showed.
Yeah.
But apparently this
instead
is...
Instead, he's doubling down on Bigfoot.
Yeah.
He's doubling... I saw Bigfoot. Don't tell me I didn't.
Right.
I mean, this is what this sounds like. Anyway, how many times have we seen this movie before? Jesse Smollett. There's no wonder that people are skeptical of these claims of nooses being put in my garage and being attacked by MAGA, two white MAGA men, MAGA hats, in the middle of Chicago in January. 0 degrees, and Jesse Smollett just happens to be out for a Subway sandwich at 2 in the morning.
And he said that the two assailants were saying, this is MAGA country.
This is MAGA country.
In the middle of Chicago.
Yeah. And the problem here is that all the news media, not all, but most all the new mainstream news media, politicians, companies, they all jump on a story like this and condemn the person who did it. I think even the governor of Alabama came out with a statement. I think I saw that a few hours or a day after this, Coca-Cola comes out and said,
yes,
we condemn this act of bigotry and racism. Bubba Wallace comes out and says, this act of despicable act of racism will not intimidate me. Well, as it turns out, Coca-Cola, governor of Alabama, Bubba Wallace, you've condemned a phantom.
Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. Well, we were the USA Today column yesterday, or maybe it was the day before, that I said that the woman who wrote the column said NASCAR needs to take a look at itself and how it has created a culture where this kind of thing can happen.
Well, the Al Sharpton philosophy on this, and I guess Bubba Wallace is buying into it too, is it doesn't matter whether these things factually happen or not. They do happen somewhere, and so it serves as a symbol, if you will. Of course, you can never... So let's don't deal with the facts, whether something ever happened or not. Let's deal with what the overarching meaning is, and that is NASCAR people are racist, and Bubba Wallace is never going to succeed in it because of that. And he's going to have nooses put up around wherever he... Anyway, it's just... You can't win with these people. Like you said, Al Sharpton, he doesn't have a television appearance if he can't keep the things stoked up. You're listening to Today's Issues on American Family Radio. All right, Fred.
As we roll along, we're finding, and this is interesting.
I like roll along after a NASCAR segment there.
I never thought about that.
Yeah,
it rolled right out of my mouth. Yeah. We're finding a connection between cities controlled by Democrats and mob rule, taking down statues and monuments, and attacking people. Can I give you a few examples?
Please.
The latest being from Madison, Wisconsin last night. A mob of protesters there outside the Wisconsin state capitol tore down two statues and attacked a state senator, who, by the way, is a Democrat, Senator Tim Carpenter. He showed up, and he was just taking photos of the protesters, and they went at him. They got him down. He got punched five or six times, got kicked in the head. Mm. All he was doing, Democrat-controlled city. Atlanta.
Did they have MAGA hats on?
No. No.
They did not?
They were missing.
Was it 2 in the morning? Was it cold?
No.
Okay. Just wanted to double check.
Atlanta, in the vicinity of that Wendy's that was torched several mm-hmm. days ago mm-hmm. in connection with the Rayshon Brooks, where he was shot by police there. Anyway, last night, this was bizarre. I didn't see it, but reading about it this morning, Steve Harrigan, a Fox reporter, shows up to talk to these three guys who are carrying heavy weapons outside of this burnt-down Wendy's. And they go on live, I think, on was it Hannity? Or one of
it was
the
Hannity.
Fox program?
I saw it.
And these guys are saying the police aren't allowed here because they're not here to protect us anymore. The police are standing back. Apparently, they've been ordered by the mayor of Atlanta not to go near these guys. So these guys say they're controlling now this area around this burnt-out Wendy's there in Atlanta. High-powered weapons, cops standing back, not doing anything. All right? Oakland, California. The mayor there says public safety reform means not just to reform the police, but to replace the police. So this mayor, Libby Schaaf, is saying, here's my plan. Yeah, police are gone. We're going to send in social workers. On and on and on this goes. And we know what's happening in Seattle. Now, the mayor out there says she's putting an end to the chop zone, whatever it is. But we're still waiting on this. Right now, the insurgents out there are still controlling that area of town. And the precinct that's in that area still hasn't turned back to the police.
I tell you what's going to be interesting about that in Seattle is this Democrat mayor. What's her name?
In Seattle?
Yeah.
I forget.
All right. Anyway, she's let this go on now for what, a month?
At least 3 weeks.
3 weeks or
mm-hmm.
so?
Mm-hmm.
And the reason she hasn't done anything to take back the 6 blocks of her city.
Jenny Durkin.
If it's still 6 blocks. Remember she said this is going to be the summer of love?
Right.
Festive mood.
Festive zone.
Is because in order to take back this area, and by the way, one of their demands is that she resign, right,
mm-hmm.
as mayor, is that you're going to have to use force. I'm talking police in riot gear going in and cleaning out the area. Well, that's going to force a confrontation between some of these more rabid anarchists, and that could get ugly.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what she is. She's basically been a coward and indecisive. Well, no, she's made a decision. She made a decision to let them have their autonomous zone.
Mm-hmm.
But some businesses there in that area are complaining now.
And there's been 3 shootings and 1 person killed.
Yes.
Last weekend.
Yeah. But I can kind of understand why you don't speak out if you're a business owner there, because the minute you speak out, your store's looted.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So they're kind of under the control of, like being under control of drug lords or something.
Yeah. And the police are ordered not to do anything.
That's the same thing that used to happen about with the mob in places like New York City and Chicago. Yeah.
But that's quote progressive ideology at work.
Yeah.
Right there in Seattle. We'll be back momentarily with more of Today's Issues. Abe Hamilton will join us.
On the next Today's Issues.
We appreciate hearing from you. You can send us an email at comments@afr.net.
I pastor a small church, so I have to have a full-time job on the side. When I try to feed the flock, y'all feed me, and I thank God for y'all.
If you want to watch the show live, you can go to Facebook or YouTube. Just type in Today's Issues, and you can also access the stories that we talk about.
Don't miss the next Today's Issues, weekday mornings at 11 Eastern, 10 Central on American Family Radio.
And my father, your great-grandfather, fought in World War II.
Really?
He was a gunner on the big ship out in the Pacific Ocean.
Wow.
Your great-grandmother did her part, too.
Was she on a ship?
Oh, no. She stayed back home. She and a lot of her friends worked really hard in a factory because the men had gone off to war.
Ooh.
And they held scrap metal drives to help in the war effort. The folks back home were heroes, too.
Here at the American Family Association, we consider you the heroes back home. As you fulfill your responsibility of caring for your family day to day, your partnership with us is crucial as we fight the enemies of freedom in America. Thank you for your commitment to the American Family Association.
Grandpa, what's a scrap metal drive?
Let's get some cookies, and I'll tell you all about it.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next.
Wondering how you'll finish your degree now? At Liberty University, we want to help. So when you transfer into one of our more than 100 undergraduate online programs this fall, you could earn up to $3,600 in transfer student scholarships, or more if you live in Virginia. That means you could pay less than $900 per course and transfer in up to 75% of your degree. That's up to 90 credits. Save time and money at a school that's been helping students like you for over 30 years. Learn more by texting degree to 49595. That's degree to 49595.
If a police officer in Erie, Pennsylvania wants to take a family vacation to Dollywood or Myrtle Beach, he has to receive permission from city leaders. Several of our listeners in Erie sent me a copy of City Hall's new pandemic travel policy. Turns out, under a declared state of emergency, the city has a right to review and manage how city workers spend their off hours. Workers were told they had to receive approval of any vacation outside the city limits, and if they refused to do so, they could be fired. They were instructed to submit a minute-by-minute vacation itinerary. No pit stops on road trips, by the way. The city says to avoid diners, hotels, rest stops. When nature calls, just pull off the side of the road. The best course of action, according to the city, would be to plan a staycation. Now, I'm sure Erie is a really nice town, but it's definitely not Dollywood. I'm Todd Starnes.
This is Today's Issues. Email your comments to comments@afr.net. Past broadcasts of Today's Issues are available for listening and viewing in the archive at afr.net. Now, back to more of Today's Issues.
Hey, welcome back, everybody, to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Tim Wildman here with Ed Vitagliano and Fred Jackson. And again, as always, we thank you for listening to AFR. If you would like to send us an email, you can do that. We're still old-fashioned here. Emails. We take emails. Emails at go to comments@afr.net. comments@afr.net is our email address. Again, if you want to watch the show, we live video stream Facebook and YouTube. Type in Today's Issues. I tell you what, Fred, before we get to the Rasmussen story,
okay,
our brother Abraham Hamilton III is with us. Good morning, Abe.
Good morning.
Abe is a constitutional attorney. He's also a public policy analyst for us here at AFR and host of the program, The Hamilton Corner, each afternoon from 5 to 6 o'clock. Hey, we were talking about this case with Michael Flynn, the general, earlier, and we had a legal question, which you have not we have not given you ahead of time, so we'll see how you do. not having time to study for the test.
Is this a job interview?
Yeah.
This
no, we want to ask you this. Now that this appellate court has ruled that case must be dismissed, that mm-hmm. that the federal judge,
Emmett Sullivan,
cannot continue it on mm-hmm. his own, is that the end of it? Or can Judge Sullivan say, I don't care what you say, appellate court, I'm going to continue on with this?
Well, Judge Sullivan can say that, but he's putting himself in a position to be disciplined by the appellate court. And he would be giving himself the opportunity to get the Roy Moore treatment, to give the House of Representatives and the Senate grounds to have him remove the impeachment.
He probably won't carry on with this. Do you think I think he'll drop it?
Yeah, I think he will. I think he may, you know, kick and fuss for another maybe few days or so, but he's going to dismiss it. Yeah. Now that the appellate court has granted General Flynn's request via his attorney for a writ of mandamus, that's an order directly instructing Judge Sullivan to do what the judicial canon requires him to do when you have a litigant who says, I want to dismiss a claim that I previously submitted to the court.
You know, it's a very dangerous road to go on, just thinking about what Judge Sullivan might do. It's a very dangerous road to go on if you say, I'm going to defy the authority above me, mm-hmm. because then he could order the attorneys of General Flynn to come in and continue, and they could say, well, we're going to ignore your order.
Right.
Since everyone's doing that, you're not following what they said, we're not showing up to the court.
Right.
And that's the danger you run when you start disobeying those who are in authority.
Yeah, it's why do I have to obey you if you don't obey the people you're accountable to?
Right.
You know, and it's a great point, and I think ultimately Judge Sullivan cares more about his job than he does about General Flynn.
Right.
And I think he wouldn't want to run the risk of him being removed with good cause.
Right.
Because you can say what you want about the case. Now you have an order from your immediate appellate court instructing you to sign the dismissal, which was submitted to you, and he refuses to do that, and he puts himself in a position of the, for common vernacular, being contempt, so to speak, from the appellate court.
Why did Judge Sullivan feel comfortable enough in doing what he did initially?
Because he knows he has cover from the media and from the feckless Congress that they won't do anything to rein him in directly. So it took for General Flynn's attorneys to file an appeal. This is very rare, filing an appeal for a motion to dismiss that was filed for the people who charged him originally.
Yes, it is bizarre.
It is extremely bizarre. But his comfort was, one, there's pretty much ideological unanimity in D.C., and two, the body that has the most immediate or the most direct accountability over the courts and to the people, he knew they would do nothing to him. Hmm. So say, why not?
Except the appellate court has rebuked him.
Now, yes.
2-1. Three-judge panel. I don't know how many. But, all right. So, did you have a question for attorney?
Yeah, we have a couple of cases. One in Oregon. You got a county out there.
Hey, Lincoln County. You're tipping your hand. with your chuckling before, you don't want to be like Sullivan where you already are biased.
Well, it's okay if my bias is in accordance with the law.
Duly noted. I'm just teasing. Go ahead.
Yeah,
Fred.
These are both wacky West Coast stories. All right, Lincoln County, Oregon, has issued a directive by their health department that specifically exempts non-Caucasians, referred to as people of color, from wearing masks required of all other county residents if they, quote, have heightened concerns about racial profiling and harassment due to wearing face coverings in public. So there's an ordinance.
Where is this again?
Lincoln County.
Oregon?
Oregon. So they passed this ordinance, everybody, because of COVID, you got to wear a mask to go outside.
Okay.
Except if you're a non-white person, and you believe by wearing a mask, you may become a victim of racial profiling. Therefore, this doesn't apply to you.
So what's your question to the attorney here? Is that constitutional?
Is that constitutional to use race as an exemption? It doesn't apply to you because of the color of your skin.
I thought anti-discrimination laws prohibited discrimination on the basis of quote-unquote race. This is absurd. I'm not going to go on and on about this, but I'm one of these people, and I said it on the Hamilton Corner. I say you have a right to your delusions, but you cannot compel me to abide by them. I am, frankly, sick and tired of the reference to people as people of color. I've never met a translucent person. You know, and I'm serious. I've never met a translucent person.
In other words, we're all people of color.
Every single person is a person of color. Because nobody's running around here like Casper the Friendly Ghost.
Right.
You know, it's
You're
ridiculous.
Going and, way off the PC reservation well, right here, Abe.
I tend not to live on reservations.
Well, there I go. See, that was a reference to a bygone day that I didn't intend.
Well, since I'm going down that road anyway, let me go to the next one. You tell me what's the difference between calling someone a person of color than calling them colored people. What's the difference?
And colored people now is considered
offensive.
Except the NAACP still has the name.
Well.
Right?
They were,
it does. But I thought
colored
people
But they're too conservative
faux,
today.
Right. I thought that was a faux pas. You know, yeah, I just, it's ridiculous. And so you mean to tell me that we're in this pandemic where it's, I mean, our dictators on high were telling us that if you go outside, you don't care for your neighbor. You are putting people's lives in jeopardy. And if you don't wear a mask, I can gather in big groups in public if I'm protesting, but I can't gather to go to church. But
because
I can.
COVID knows.
Because COVID is all knowing, and is a prescient, sentient being. You see, and I cannot go in public with a mask. I mean, I cannot go in public without a mask unless I have a melanin privilege. And at that point, then you have the dual pandemic crises in America because you have the COVID, the Kung Flu, or systemic racism. And so on this COVID scale of severity, apparently, systemic racism can karate chop Kung Flu.
Oh, man.
So
the meter just broke.
So I'm trying to keep up because I just want to understand what's going on here. This is absolutely ludicrous. This is ludicrous.
Now, let me just say this.
As well as illegal.
So I've personally, on behalf of people of color, I have been triggered in two areas with this law. First, it sounds to me like these county health officials want black people to get the coronavirus and die.
Because if
masks are necessary to protect people, it sounds like they're encouraging black people not to wear masks because they don't care about black people. Mm. And second of all,
people of all colors, Ed.
Well, I'm triggered. Okay, Tim. I have a right to my triggeredness.
You do.
Yes.
And the second thing that looks suspect to me is the fact that their explanation is that because young black men wearing masks remind everybody of criminals, then they perhaps should have the freedom not to wear them. And I'm thinking, why? Why are you saying that a young black man with a mask reminds you of a criminal? That sounds like a stereotype to me.
It does.
I'm triggered on both of those.
And I agree. And you have been elected the proxy for all non-translucent persons.
And as a woke white person, black people need me to stand up for them because they can't stand up for themselves.
That is ridiculous.
That we're talking about now before we it's a county, one county.
Yes.
Now, is that a big county though? Is that one of the Portland area?
It's just described as a coastal county.
Okay, in Oregon.
I don't think it's Portland.
It's the Wacky West, this is yet another exhibit of what quote progressive politics looks like. Someone wrote a book a few years ago, Liberalism is a Mental Disorder. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I've forgotten who.
That was Michael Savage.
Michael Savage. No truer statement has ever been uttered because so many of these ideas, such that they are, that come from the far left, just don't work. They don't work. And they're unenforceable in many ways. You're listening to Today's Issues on American Family Radio. I don't know, I would say that kind of thing, that kind of idea wouldn't spread to other counties or other states, but we see what's happening in Seattle. We see what's happening in other parts of the country. Let me ask you this, another question, a more broader general question where we got you having studied the Constitution and the history of our country and have an appreciation for the Christian roots of Western civilization and America. The other day, I saw Victor Hansen. What's the guy's name?
Victor Davis Hansen.
Yes, him. And he was on Laura Ingraham, I think. And he made a statement. I was unfamiliar to him till he started appearing on these television Fox television programs. Very astute fella.
Yeah, he's a prolific writer too.
A
farmer.
Is he a farmer?
As well.
But
as
anyway, he made the comment that America as we know it is under siege by these leftists, by these people we're seeing on television night after night who are tearing down statues, who are demanding that everything be renamed all the way back to our country's founding, demanding that, well, claiming that the Black Lives Matter woman, one of the founders, says we're trained Marxist. Mm-hmm. So I guess what I'm asking, that was a, even though I share his belief, that's where these folks are headed. It was kind of shocking to hear a guy say, "No, you may disagree with what Trump tweets sometimes, but if Biden is elected in November, our country is going to change dramatically or fundamentally because the people that are behind the Democrat, the people that are pushing." Biden, who is a traditional Democrat, if you want to try to put him in the spectrum of what Democrats are pushing him, and they're going to fill his, this is what I got from this gentleman, they're going to fill his administration with the AOC types, the far left types, mm-hmm. and they are going to run the show. And anyway, they want to, as President Barack Obama said one time, fundamentally change, transform the country. That's a long-winded question, but do you think this is where these people are ultimately headed here with this?
I have this no movement? Doubt about it that that's their goal.
Okay, Marxism.
Oh, no doubt about it that that's their goal.
That's pretty.
It's a bold. It's a bold statement, but the zeal within the Democrat Party is among the Marxist wing. That is where the zeal is. That is why you have groups like the Democratic Socialists of America that are seeking a primary, conservative Democrats. That's almost an oxymoron today. Right. And that is a part of their goal. They're not radical enough. Nancy Pelosi is not radical enough for them. And their objective is to use Joe Biden, not even as a Trojan horse, because we know we can see what's coming, as the way to get in power, to seize power from the federal level. That is what they're seeking to accomplish. And you see a perfect example is that, I don't know how many people know this, but right now, people who are contributing financially to Black Lives Matter, their money is being redirected to Act Blue. Mm-hmm. That is a clearinghouse for Democrat candidates from Joe Biden all the way down the ballot. So they are using the Biden presidency as the face, really, for a Marxist revolution in our country. That is what they are seeking to accomplish.
That's why. So one of the ways you accomplish this is doing away with borders.
Yes, that's one of them.
So the Democrat Party is for doing away with borders. I don't know if that's in their official statement, but everything else is. And for all practical purposes, they are.
They'll say it differently. They're for justice for the immigrant.
Okay. Right. But they don't want. Joe Biden, even the Democrat nominee, he said that he's not for any kind of, what did he call, restraining any longer?
Yeah,
restraining, is that the right word I'm looking for? Or holding of people who come walk over the border?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But
detaining, that's yes. The word. So if you're not for detaining anybody that walks over the border, then you're not for any kind of border control, which means you do away with the border agents. Don't put them at risk for. If they can't detain, what are they going to wave it? Wave, serve sandwiches, and wave. So I think about that for just a moment, folks. And I think that President Trump and his campaign and the Republicans will draw this contrast out as we go through the summer and as we look toward the presidential debates and ultimately the election in November. But this is the party now, the Democrat Party now. Bill Clinton, by the way, would not be welcome to this party at all. this is no. He would be way too conservative for them. But this, if you're the party that champions doing away with borders and letting everybody come here who can get here, well, I don't see the need for passports anymore, quite frankly. Why would you need passports if everybody can come here through the through open borders? But that's I digress, which is rare. Okay, that's just one example. That's just one example I'm using of the ideology of the progressive left, which has been adopted by the Democrat Party. Some still try to hide it with different kinds of words and languages and say, oh, no, we're not for this or we're not for that, like defunding the police, for example, which is an okay, this is also the party. Now, there's a split in the Democrat Party about defunding the police. But still, those who say we're not for defunding the police, big cities all across America are now voting to defund the police. Mm-hmm. By defund, I mean not only completely abolish, some who do that, and then some would cut the police departments down to where they don't have any money hardly at all to operate.
I think the New York Police Department just abolished their plainclothes unit, yeah. 600 officers.
Yeah. Gone. So my question is, are these not examples of where this progressive left movement is going? And what is their ultimate, and they say they're Marxist too, so what is their ultimate objective here?
Well, I'll tell you plainly. I remember people after President Obama's term in office that he was a failure of a president. And you guys know, I've said that if in order to assess somebody as a success or failure, you have to know what their objectives were. And I'm telling you, the man was not a failure. His objective was to fundamentally transform the United States of America. What we are living in right now, we are living in a push to bring his objective into full culmination. Their desire in the revolutionary abolitionist movement, which is another regressive outpost to try to hijack the George Floyd protest to bring in anarchy, they literally said, liberation begins when America dies. Right. That is what they said. Liberation begins when America dies. Their objective is to completely lift the United States of America up off and away from its foundation and mooring, and to create a new Marxist utopia. That is their objective. It is not some new objective. It's the same objective Marx and Engels had. It's the same objective that Georgie Lukacs had when he developed critical theory, when he saw the failure of the Marxist agenda following World War I. It's not a new agenda. It's just being applied to us and having an advancement we have never seen in our country yet. This follows their infiltration of our educational systems, cultivating within our young people an appetite for socialism, a disdain for liberty, freedom, and capitalism, and we are seeing those seeds grow into a full floral harvest right now.
Okay, my question about that, and then I know Fred has one too, Abe. 50% of our country, roughly, are Democrats. We're a split country, 50% Republican, 50% Democrat. Basically, the numbers vary according to different states and so forth. Do you think Democrats, the majority of them, subscribe to this idea of fundamentally changing America? Because if that's the case, I just want to say, wow, I'm really, that's that. Anyway, go ahead.
I don't, but I would point you to Brigitte Gabriel's description of Islamic terrorism. Because most people will say that the overwhelming majority of Islamic terrorists are peaceful, right? But what is the benefit of having a peaceful yet silent majority? Mm-hmm. What I'm saying to you is that in the Democrat Party, the loudest voice, the most consistent voice, and the most demanding voices agree with this. And so that is why they are continually pushing the Democrat Party, even though I would agree that the majority of those who identify themselves as Democrats may not agree with the radicalism, but they are Democrats. The loudest and most aggressive and passionate voices within the Democrat Party are demanding this push towards Marxism. And that's why I think you see this happening. We saw it in the primary with Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders. We know Hillary Clinton didn't agree with all those things that Bernie Sanders was proposing, but she adopted policies reflecting them. Why? Because Bernie's supporters were the loudest. And that is what's happening to the National Democrat Party, which is why right now there's no such thing. As generally speaking, there are very few exceptions, but generally speaking, that you very rarely see something like a pro-life Democrat.
To Abe's point, last night on the Ingram Files, she interviewed a Venezuelan activist, Elizabeth Rogliani, she has observed how Venezuela went from a capitalist nation to a Marxist-Leninist nation. Very scary thing she had to say, because she said she observed what happened down there in this transition from a capitalist nation. Remember, they supplied oil. We got
a very wealthy nation.
Very wealthy.
One of the wealthiest in the world.
Yeah. One of the things that happened down there was the tearing down of monuments. You have to get rid of those symbols of the past in order to make this transition. I want you to have a listen to what she had to say, and we'll come back a little bit, because she also says a leader of the Black Lives Matter movement went down to Venezuela to praise the dictator. Have a listen, cut number 9.
And we saw the evidence of the VLM founders being in an ally to the Venezuelan regime. I saw pictures of them in 2015 where Opalto Meti, one of the co-founders of the BLM movement, went to Venezuela and called and said that she was happy to be in a place with intelligent political discourse. I had a lot of friends that told me, oh, it's just the Confederate statues. And I said, no, it's not going to be just the Confederate statues. Just wait and see. This is a slippery slope. The next thing is going to be all the symbols of the United States. Founding fathers are going to be attacked. Religious symbols are going to be attacked. And next, probably museums. I mean, anything can be attacked if you just let it happen.
Pretty scary when she's able to take what happened in Venezuela and she says, I'm seeing the same things happen here in the United States.
Well, what A was talking about, too, is the fact that a lot of young people, first of all, they don't really know what real socialism is. They're thinking in terms of free college tuition and free health care. But to your point about the loudest voices in the Democratic Party, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez won her primary 70%. Mm-hmm. Now, there was a lot of talk. I mean, she had a good – Michelle Caruso Cabrera was her opponent in the primary. There was some thought that she might lose her primary because of the Amazon fiasco where she didn't want them. No, 70% voted for AOC, knowing where she stands. That is where all the energy and that is where all the foot soldiers are going to come from for the Democratic Party going in the future. That's a scary proposition.
It is. I'll give you another example. Yesterday on my program, I played audio that I know most people didn't even see this because the national media didn't cover it, but I played audio following the bloodiest weekend in American history, which was in Chicago over the weekend. 106 people shot, 14 killed. Well, followed by Monday, another 41 were shot, 6 more killed. But there were local citizens on the ground. They had prayer meetings in the community. They had community leaders who had protests against the violence who came out and said, people only come out and give attention when you have, you know, a so-called white police officer killing a black person, when we know the killing in our community is happening not by police officers. But you didn't see any national attention on that. Right. And I raised the question, why is that? Because the loudest voices are going in the direction to support a narrative. They literally, you have BLM saying that we're moving to defund the police. These people were saying in their communities, I played the audio on my show, they're saying, no, we need the police. We need everybody in our community. We know who these people are who are shooting. We need to work with the police to root out the violent elements because it's the minority of people in these communities who are violent. It's not everybody. But the media doesn't cover that because it doesn't fit their narrative.
And what is their narrative?
Their narrative is the BLM narrative. We need to, capital BLM, we need to defund the police when the people in the community don't want the police defunded. But it doesn't matter because the loudest voice in the overall agenda.
Hey, this fits nicely with the next story. Fred's going to bring up a Rasmussen poll which supports what Abe's talking about. There is strong support within the black community for law enforcement.
Yes.
And you wouldn't know that by watching the mainstream media. Can you hang around for another...
I sure can.
Few minutes. All right. Ed, Fred, and Tim will be back with Abe momentarily. You're listening to Today's Issues on American Family Radio.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.